Third. Okay, go ahead.
We are effectively a division of NARUC, the National Association of Regulatory Utility Commissioners. My job is to do energy policy research for all the state public utility regulatory agencies, and my content area that I focus on is energy efficiency, renewable energy, global climate destabilization, and all the grid modernization activity that's going on. So I just recently learned about your group, and it sounds like you're studying many of the same kinds of things that I'm studying. I'm always on the lookout for possible partnerships and trying to learn who is doing what in the realms of anything to do with working towards sustainability and clean energy. A hobby that I have is eco-villages and long-term sustainability. So it's just things that I study all the time. I'm always looking for grant opportunities, either through foundations or particularly the federal government, but it could also be from state governments. And wanted to just have a discussion about the ideas that maybe there's some ways for us to work together on any things that you're already doing that are related to, you know, moving towards clean energy, smart cities, more energy efficiency, and so forth.
Do you have a specific goal in mind?
I call my specific goal the nonviolent overthrow of stupid energy policy. We are at a point where the energy technology has raced so far ahead of our institutional knowledge and our regulatory systems that the new technologies are struggling to gain a foothold and chafing against, you know, 100 years of policy that was designed to make sure that some of these things couldn't happen. So now that they're here and they're practical and they're, you know, really ready for us to be using, they're having a very hard time getting started in most places in the country and in most places in the world, because we have a regulatory structure that was set up to make sure that only monopoly utility companies could play. So, I mean, that's a very short and flippant answer to the question, but that's what I grapple with day in and day out.
Gary, do you want to add something to that? Talk a little bit about what you're doing over there in California? Gary Braun?
Sure. Happy to do that. Tom, I think our interests are very well aligned, and my work nowadays, I've kind of had a career that's been energy oriented, renewables oriented, and utility and solar oriented for a long time, and now my focus is really on trying to identify the best ways that utilities and local energy utilities and local jurisdictions can start talking to each other and communicating and collaborating around the growing interest in, you know, developing local resources and local grid integration. And so, actually, Sierra is a member of an advisory group that I set up for a one-year project to come up with policy recommendations for states, because the states basically, you know, basically there's kind of a little, you know, Venn diagram with energy utilities, states, and local jurisdictions, and there are points of communication, but the weak point is really between cities and energy utilities. One thing that I've been involved in for a few years now, or actually more than 10 years, is community choice in California, which basically allows cities and counties to take charge of sourcing electricity so that, you know, they can basically adjust their portfolio, you know, the energy portfolio, the supply portfolio that the electricity comes from, to be greener, and also in parallel or in longer term to rely more on local resources and more integrated resources at the local level, including net zero neighborhoods, net zero communities, and so forth. So that's what, you know, that there's an active project. It's not externally funded. We're doing it as part of my not-for-profit organization, but we've just started, and I personally see state policy as the key, because the states can basically they regulate the big grid owners and their cost recovery and so forth, and they also have a lot of programs that reach out to local jurisdictions and really can make policy that relates to trying to help local jurisdictions develop the capacity to work with the grid owners and bring on more renewables, for example. In California, community choice has kind of just finally reached a tipping point, and it's causing a lot of angst among our state regulators. But basically, we have probably at least a dozen community choice programs already up and running or very close to that, and it looks like a big chunk of the state's electricity supply is going to be procured through these agencies. So it's kind of an upheaval that we're having in California. So I'll let you, I'll be quiet, and I just want to try to answer Sierra's question.
George, why don't you contribute a little bit about what you're working on over there? George Wiltsey, also in California.
Also a perspective from California. Hi, Tom. You're absolutely right. These are very disruptive technologies, and they're up against a very entrenched industry when you look at it nationwide, especially. Just as Jerry was saying, I think in California per se, and probably, I don't know, three or four other states, there is a far more progressive movement going on. There's widespread recognition of these technologies. There's a tremendous push from project and technology developers to get their toehold in this industry. I think the utilities are very, very well aware, and not being totally foot-dragging about it, although somewhat, but they're actively studying and trying to figure out how to revise their business models in order to adapt to this. And the state grid, CAISO, is also very actively trying to figure out how to adapt its business model to this, because they see it coming and they understand some of the implications for their sort of status quo. So what that kind of suggests to me, and maybe suggests to you, is perhaps you could focus initially your efforts on the states like California, where that is happening, and work with those utility commissions to sort of move them along and help them to figure out the right approaches and be active, because once that's sort of the history of disruptive technologies, is it'll find a few sort of first adopters that then there's a wave that starts to happen after that, which is, simply irresistible and you can't stop it. But making that happen quicker in the areas of the country where it's already recognized to be the case, and just question of grappling with how do you actually make this happen given the old established business practices. So my thought would be maybe focus on those particular utility commissions and industries that they're regulating. What do you think about that?
Any comments?
Well, it's an interesting conundrum for us because I'm extremely aware of which states are doing what, and I work with the North Carolina State University Center for Clean Energy Technology. They are now publishing, it's the group that has always done the DESIRE database. Are you all familiar with that, DESIRE?
Sure.
Right.
All right, so now, for one thing, DOE quit funding them, so they don't have any more DESIRE funding, which is a tragedy of national importance, but that's, just the way it is today in Washington. They've started publishing a whole series of reports about what the 50 states are doing on different topic areas. One is the 50 states of solar policy. One is the 50 states of grid modernization. And a brand new one is the 50 states of electric vehicle policy. I work with them on developing those reports quarterly, and they always send me the draft, and I help them edit and so forth. One of my next papers is explicitly about all of the grid modernization activities going on around the country, and I've identified 8 major topic areas that are being addressed. California is one of the leaders. California and Hawaii are far out ahead of the other states in actually starting to implement. New York is close behind, although New York, as probably you all know, is engaged in the third year of a 14-month project. That's what their commissioner said recently, so it's no secret, but they're engaged in a huge project to try to figure sort of all the pieces at once and then implement a new vision. It's being way slower than they thought it might be. There's probably another half dozen states close behind, each of which has created a massive process in their state commission to think about this. That includes Ohio, Minnesota, Michigan, Massachusetts, Rhode Island. Those are just some of the ones off the top of my head. But it's not often that we are getting in, my own office is getting invited to help California. There's much more interest in our office helping to tell all the states that are sort of in the middle of the pack or laggards what the states in the front of the pack are doing, because then it helps them decide what it is that they want to do to catch up or keep up, if that's what they want to do. And that, that's just the reality of my organization and how we're funded and the history of the work that we've done in the past. It doesn't mean we can't hopefully change our focus in the future. We're getting a new director very soon. And, if that works out the way we expect, we're getting an extremely qualified, capable director who has had a lot more success in their previous career in getting more cutting-edge funding to do more cutting-edge work. I have, at any given time, 15 or 20 particular topics that I know of that are ripe to work on, if only somebody knew that they should be paying us to do that, or paying somebody to do it. And, my bandwidth is going to be very limited. I'm just one individual. My organization right now has only got 4 researchers. One focuses on telecommunications. One focuses more and more on natural gas, although they cross over sometimes to other industries. An example right now is I worked with a team that put in a grant proposal to the Architecture 2030 people and the Architecture 2030 districts, and we've got full cooperation from them to help flesh out their system of thinking about what it's going to take to make buildings use half as much energy and half as much water by the year 2030. That's the 2030 district goal. And that creates some fabulous opportunities to, you know, work on describing in a lot more detail what the techniques are, and then starting to explain to the utilities why it matters to them, because we have utility planners all over the country, you know, using a straight edge and the previous history to think about what their future is going to be like, while their future is changing so fast that they're not going to know what hit them. And there's a couple trillion dollars at stake here, because the utilities, at least many, many that I know of, are all planning to do exactly the wrong thing in the face of all this new technology. They want to double down very quickly on the old technology because they realize that their window of being able to spend that kind of money on those kind of central facilities is closing fast. And so they want to be the last ones in to build the wrong thing. You know, very dangerous for our economy and our world, but, you know, we're facing that to the tune of tens of billions of dollars this year alone, all over the country. So, you know, there's no shortage of ways to gain leverage. I mean, this is one of the things that I try to study all the time, is how are we going to gain more leverage? How are we going to help spread the good ideas faster and snuff out the bad ideas faster? You know, I'm constantly trying to learn more about, you know, who's doing what along those lines to be able to more readily share the good things with one another.
I want to say one thing. Several of you are working on similar kinds of projects. So my question to everybody is, how can we use my technologies that I get out to 4,000 universities, cities, utilities across the country to help move this forward in some kind of a way that would make some of these changes actually happen? So go ahead.
Well, Sierra, this is Baird. If I can join in and give a brief thumbnail. I wasn't one of the advertised speakers, but Tom, I'm counsel to something called the Microgrid Resources Coalition, which has which is affiliated with the International District Energy Association, which is a much larger organization. And we've been working for about 3 years now to put in put our oar in the water with state public utility commissions that are trying to make progress on this. And you can go to the website of the Microgrid Resources Coalition and look under resources on the top bar and advocacy, and you can see everything we ever filed with anybody, mostly about exactly these issues, clearing out barriers and making sure that there's open access to markets for grid edge players. I'm also a small corner of a larger effort that's being sponsored by Environmental Law Institute to publish a book on legal pathways to deep decarbonization. And I've done a chapter on financing at the grid edge, which explores all the barriers that both on the, you know, preventing the grid edge assets from playing in terms of the utility motivations, and I think that's going to come out in the Environmental Law Journal next month. In any event, sort of a catalog of what's going on, especially as it ultimately plays out in finance. So I'd love to see, it's something that I've been proposing. We talked to Desire about it for a while. We've never found funding for it, but, you know, the catalog of all the issues state by state of what prevents you from making your own power, have a third party sell power to you on your own property, selling power to your neighbor, in other words, taking local control of making and buying power. I finished up my article that I just mentioned with a sort of a bill of rights for customers and communities at the grid edge. and we need to get to what the barriers are and what the workarounds are in all the different states.
That's extremely interesting to me. I just had notice of my acceptance to do a policy presentation at the Microgrid 2.0 conference in Baltimore in October, which is that parent group, right?
Yes. Yeah, I will. I will certainly see you there.
And I've been asked to do a paper with some co-authors for Utility Policy Journal on exactly what you're talking about, looking at those policy issues both for the already developed world, where functionally we're going to start to take the grid apart one load or one building or one neighborhood at a time, and also for the as-yet undeveloped world where, you know, all these governments all over Africa and South America and Central America are trying to figure out how they're going to do microgrids in a way that's a little bit difficult because they don't have any regulation for them at this point. So both are highly relevant, and, you know, I've been working on that now for a couple of years, trying to figure out what that structure might look like. So it sounds like the work that you have been doing is completely relevant to that discussion. I'll go take a look at the website and study more. I'm in cahoots with the Microgrids Institute with Michael Zimmer, who's one of the co-authors for some of this work already. And
well, say hi to Mike for me.
Yeah, it's a small world, right? And then I did a big paper for the state commissions on that exact subject in 2012, and subsequent to that, you probably already know that Minnesota hired the Microgrid Institute to start to do that analysis for its laws. Maryland started to do that analysis for itself. I'm not sure how many other states might be actively embarked on such a thing. I think maybe to some extent Hawaii and California. All those states in the Northeast are doing these things called public purpose microgrids.
Yeah,
and
right.
Of course, Department of Defense is doing it all over the country, and it's really fabulously interesting to me that no utility is standing up and telling the Department of Defense they can't do it. But if other customers want to do the same thing, unless you happen to be a state university, it's very likely for the utility to tell you, no, you can't do that. That's against the law. We're never going to let that happen. You know, we've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly with respect to how that's happening. Puerto Rico's new rules may be of, you know, just huge significance internationally if they get finalized in something like the shape that they were in last I looked. You know, they're going to be creating a positive right on the part of any group of any 10 customers to get together and make a microgrid, with or without attaching to the macro grid. Colorado just passed its law that legalizes storage for everybody, which is another piece of the puzzle. One of my favorite areas to work on, and one where I do think once we identify those barriers and we can start breaking down those barriers for particular microgrid use cases, that's going to open up the grid edge in huge new ways very rapidly. I'm also very interested in the financing aspect, and here in Michigan I worked on what has now become Michigan Saves, which is something like a green bank that was started with some state funding, and they've now turned their first $100 million worth of projects on their way to their new goal, which is to get to $1 billion.
Hey, Tom, this is Shalom Flank. I'm a microgrid architect based in Washington, D.C., I keep hearing people talk about what's going on with public service commissions of the 50 states. Well, there's a 51st public service commission, and of course,
oh, yeah.
Puerto Rico.
We know that for sure, right?
You know, we may not have quite the same resources as California, but a lot of the things that we're talking about on this call are happening at the DCPSC or the equivalent of our state legislature, the DC Council.
Right.
And just last week, there was a New piece of legislation introduced at the council. The hearings on the first reading will be happening soon for a DER authority. So this would be kind of operating in parallel with the PSC. And one of the key components of the legislation is for non-wires alternatives. Anytime that the utility files a notice of construction, that there would automatically be a process for identifying distributed energy resources, including microgrids, that could provide the same level of grid functionality as what the utility is proposing in terms of wires infrastructure.
Yeah, absolutely. Betty Ann Kane has been on our board of directors for the last few years, and we've worked fairly closely with the DC Commission. I did one of the early papers on non-transmission alternatives, and I worked with the state of Maine on their docket, which is essentially about creating that DER entity that's not a utility and not a customer, but, you know, a manager of what they called it, a smart grid administrator initially. And they've already had success in doing that in one geographic location in Maine. You know, this is, I heard your presentation on the webinar. I guess that was maybe my first exposure to this group and what you all are doing. And then that's what triggered my conversation with Sierra.
Oh, good.
It sounds like definitely what you all are doing is related to what I'm trying to do. And perhaps there are ways that we can talk with one another and use somehow this network to help magnify what it is we're trying to do.
Yeah, well, and certainly next time you're coming into town for an NRRI or NARUC meeting, let me know and we can get together and dive into some of these things in a little more depth.
Yeah, by all means, thank you.
Anybody else feel free to dive in here?
Well, and just before this call, I just got off a call with the NARUC headquarters office because they've gotten one of the new solar energy network grants from DOE that are run through NREL. Maybe you've already seen this, but just this last week they announced 15, I think, new projects where, you know, through the solar initiatives, they're trying to work on all various kinds of issues that are related to this, and NARUC got one of those grants to work on grid flexibility and how to use solar plus batteries for more resilience. So, you know, now I have to talk with my own colleagues there about how the work that I'm doing relates to what they're doing and then, you know, see how that moves forward. One thing that occurred to me is that perhaps many of you are working in areas where the utilities are not state-regulated, but they're municipal or they're self-regulated co-ops. And, you know, I always wonder if there isn't some better way to get better information spread more quickly to some of those entities. My own local municipal utility is acting like it's the 1950s, although instead of now wanting to build a new coal plant, they want to build a new giant gas plant. But, you know, I'm part of a local group struggling mightily to try to bring them into the 21st century over their kind of backwards antique planning methods and all the decisions that they've been making recently.
You know, this is Jerry. I want to reflect back on what you just said, Tom. You know, and I mentioned community choice, and one of the interesting things we're doing in our program in our county is that we basically hired the Sacramento Municipal Utility to take charge of the power procurement process for the CCA. And what that will do, I hope, is that, you know, the core startup function which is power procurement, traditional power procurement, for quite frankly, will be in good hands. And the agency can then focus its other resources on programs for local resource development, programs for microgrids, things like that. You know, you're absolutely right about the municipal utility industry has the advantage and the disadvantage of having no state regulation. And so being insulated from state policy means that, the industry, the municipal utility industry, can continue to pretty much focus on its main task, which is cheap power, cheap electricity for their communities. But they do have great capabilities. And what I would like to suggest again is that with the community choice, basically the governance of the community choice programs is not just by the state, although in California our state regulators are looking to really take control and basically have the community choice agencies as another of their essentially their regulated clients. And I think there's going to be a lot of pushback on that from, that's exactly what these local initiatives are looking not to have. They already are served by the state-regulated utilities, and they want more local control. But their governing boards are basically elected officials from the member jurisdictions. And one of the things that I see as a great potential for community choice is that the community choice agency, especially those that are assisted by, very well-qualified municipal utilities, have the ability then to really help the local jurisdictions, their member jurisdictions, to really engage on, the local development. I've been, most of my work here lately has been about how can that work? How can the local jurisdictions get involved and be helped to be involved? And I think state policy is a key thing because I really see that that continuing to focus on the regulated utilities and state regulation of the utilities is not where the action is going to be. In fact, it's almost, it's almost the anchor that we're dragging right now. So I'm interested in working with people who see the need for the local, for local capacity, local action by the, by local, by cities and counties as kind of the thing that if you put it together with the with what the big grid owners are capable of, and what others are capable, what the distributed energy industry is capable of, we'll make progress a lot faster than we will by trying to drive things from the top down. I think it's important for the states to be shifting their focus from just regulating the big utilities to creating policies that break the logjam for local resources to get developed. So I just wanted to throw that in. You triggered that thought.
Hi, this is Rick Brown. Jerry, this is Rick Brown. I'm sorry I've been late to the call. I just want to let you guys know that today the National Renewable Energy Lab released a press release, maybe it was last evening, about the Solar Energy Innovation Network program that they have. We're one of the participants in that, working with Lancaster Choice Energy and Peninsula Clean Energy. And the Clean Coalition is involved in that, working with the City of San Diego to develop tools to promote DERs, using those more local jurisdictions as the vehicle to make that happen versus worrying about trying to jam through the top-down approach that, Jerry, you were referring to. So you might want to just go on the, you know, NREL website and see what there's 9 teams around the country doing this. We're the 2 teams, Clean Coalition and Terra Verde, and we're partnered with the Center for Climate Protection, are the 2 teams in California working on this. So I can discuss that at some point if people are interested.
Yeah,
that's exactly the program that NARUC got a grant from as well, Solar Energy Innovations Network, SEIN, right?
Yeah. NARUC is involved also with a group on the, I think, from the Midwestern states. Is that right?
I'm sorry. I just started hearing about it today, and I haven't studied in any detail yet. Let's see. They're going to draw from commissioners and staff from all over the country, not just the West, not just the Midwestern states. In fact, the list, tentative list, is Minnesota, Rhode Island, California, Colorado, Vermont. That's tentative,
right.
And I don't think they've gotten very far in figuring that out.
No,
July.
Well, actually, there's going to be a workshop in Golden at the lab that we're going to at the end of May.
NARUC is going to hold a workshop in conjunction with their summer meeting in Scottsdale in July.
Cool. Yeah, that's great.
This is Evan Hughes. Can you hear me?
Go ahead, Evan.
Hi.
Oh, sure.
Hi, Evan. Go ahead.
I thought of a question for Jerry when he talked about the local resources being worked on by the local board, while in his case the nearby municipal utility takes care of the conventional procurement. One example that may exist near Davis, California, would be the landfill has landfill gas, and I don't know how much they're doing today on that, but that could be one immediately available local resource. Jerry, can you tell us any update on that or other example of a local resource you think you can develop?
Well, actually, it's good. Thanks for the question, Evan. We're just at the point we've spent all of the kind of the managerial and governance energy so far and advisory energy on the launch phase, and we're just now sending out notices to customers to, you know, regarding startup. So we're now just now, in fact, we had a meeting earlier in the week of the advisory group to start the work the SMUD is going to help us basically take inventory of the local resource options. Probably the best way to do that, probably by June or so, we'll be putting out a solicitation to start the process of finding the resources that are most opportune. So it's probably going to be more relying on that mechanism than more studies. We've done some studies of what's available, but until you really give people an opportunity to develop projects, you really won't know what's possible. The county has been working, just to answer your question, Evan, specifically, the county is basically changing its organic waste processing approach. It's looking biodigester project as well as the landfill gas collection process. I don't have any more details on that, but I could probably get some if you were interested.
That's by Yolo County.
Yeah, that's Yolo County. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, let me mention just a couple things about that. I was the biomass energy program coordinator in Michigan for several years. The last thing that you ever want to do with any good biomass is try to turn it into wholesale electricity. And I happen to know a Michigan company that already knows how to convert the methane into your choice of valuable industrial chemicals, including clean diesel fuel or gasoline equivalent. And they can do that at any scale. So, you know, I just encourage people to look very closely. I know the contracts are easy to get to sell electricity sometimes, and so it can be a path of least resistance to do that. But, you know, there are other opportunities that are equally good or maybe even much better depending on where you are. Now, California electricity prices might be twice what they are in the Midwest, too, so that'll make a difference. Are you all familiar with the energy zones mapping system that was developed by the national labs?
I'm not.
You'll be happy to know that the National Laboratories invented and prepared and makes publicly available for free a GIS of the entire continental United States with some 300 data layers that are related to everything you could possibly think of that has to do with energy planning, and a whole lot of things that you never would have thought of that have to do with energy planning. And it goes all the way down to the, you know, sub-township level. They were able to assemble available GIS data from all over and build it all into one giant system. It's available online from the Argonne National Labs called the Energy Zones Mapping Tool. I think it's ezmappingtool.gov or something like that. You'll be able to easily find it online. If you can't, let me know and I'll get you in contact with it. But that could be a very helpful starting point for doing the kind of city or county analysis that you were talking about.
George Wilkie may have had some experience trying to find local resources here in the peninsula at one time. George, do you have any comments on that experience?
Yeah, hi, thanks, Evan. Actually, that was not one of the things we looked at as a priority. When I was at Peninsula Clean Energy, it was during the startup year, and we had an extremely thin staff who focused on, you know, it was a bandwidth issue. And so we talked to people who came to us, which, you know, was very few of the biogas or biomass opportunities in that immediate area. So, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Getting back to the original topic, my question is, where should we go from here? We have some really important information discussed in this call. What's the next step with this? Anybody?
I have one idea for the next step. California adopted SB 350 about 2 years ago, setting the goals for 2030, which included one about doubling the energy efficiency basically in buildings in the state. I think both residential and commercial buildings. It wasn't clear when they did this what doubling meant, but I think that's been defined since then, perhaps by the Energy Commission and the PUC or someone else. And I think that they started on procurements that are directed at encouraging these energy efficiency measures, which could well include DER, I think, at the building level. Has anyone followed either the procurements or grant opportunities or other things that may have been done to fulfill this in California?
Bob, do you have any comments on that? Sarah,
I think
I ask you a question. Oh, go ahead.
No, I probably missed a bit of the question. I'm not familiar with what's coming out of the efficiency program. I know that the renewables program still has a very strong community focus and local resource focus, and they have done, you know, continued to do almost annually solicitations on that. But the efficiency folks are not really, as far as I know, doing much that relates to integrated deployment. Basically efficiency and renewables as an integrated piece. So an integrated DER piece, I guess, is what I would say. So I'm not familiar with that, but I think it's where they need to go.
Hi, this is Rick from Terra Verde. Yeah, there really hasn't been much in terms of large-scale procurement. Where the policy direction's gone so far is in the next update of California's code, known as Title 24, that's ramping up requirements for installation of, be it air or water or any kind of electrical upgrade to become more efficient. But in terms of the procurement side, the projects that I mentioned, the one project I mentioned, which is our Enroll project, is geared to developing a rate structure tool that CCAs or any load serving entity could use to incentivize customers through the tariff to implement energy efficiency equipment as well as solar and storage. The other project we have with MCE, Clean Energy, the CCA covering much of the North Bay, funded through the California Energy Commission, which is called Building Energy Optimization Project, is around creating a valuation methodology, a tool that LSCs, CCAs, or any other LSC can use to identify within their 100, 200, 300, whatever, 500,000 account holders, which of those locations are going to have the best financial outcome from both a behind-the-meter customer standpoint, but also for the LSC in terms of any potential aggregation of grid resources or load shaping to support their wholesale procurement. So there are initiatives, and this is just one of a number of initiatives that are going on in California to create the infrastructure, the sort of intellectual infrastructure, whatever, to be able to develop programs that have that more of a mass deployment approach. And there's a whole other group that's working on, assuming you can identify where all those, high-value accounts are, what are some of the financing mechanisms other than OBF or OBR, which have not really been all that successful, to be able to stimulate customers to get to the economics, to see the economic value so that they will go forward with those purchases, either on their own or through programs designed by the CCA, where they're living. So that's kind of my understanding of where we are on that path in California.
This is Rob Hammond.
This is Baird Brown. Delaware is sort of the opposite end of the scale from California. I think about 800,000 souls altogether. It's created something called the Delaware Sustainable Energy Utility, whose mission is basically to bring energy efficiency and renewable energy to every sector of the economy. One of the things that we've done there is pooled energy efficiency financing with tax-exempt bonds for governmental and nonprofit entities. The same kinds of techniques work with taxable finance for other kinds of entities. And CCAs or municipal utilities are great platforms. In our experience, there's a lot of just technical complexity to doing an invasive and technologically different program in your own building that people are reluctant about. And it's more bringing people along than it is bringing financing along. The financing part is comparatively easy, And you can do, we just did 35 municipalities in the four counties around Philadelphia for LED streetlights, and we did a common procurement and got probably a 20% reduction in the cost of doing the streetlight retrofits, and then had a common finance program for the ones who wanted financing. So there's a lot of, having an entity that can be the trusted advisor and help bring enough information and common wisdom to the pool is extremely valuable in helping things from individuals to municipalities along.
Rob, you had a comment there. Go ahead.
Thanks. This is Rob Hammond from Bureau of Energy in California. There was a comment about DER and how that might be fitting in with how that might be integrated into Title 24, and it's not. There's a nice white paper out from the Southern California Edison regarding the value of DER, but the utilities and so forth don't seem to be picking up very fast on that. The Title 24 is updated every 3 years, and the 15-day language has just been released. So we're very close to settling on the what will become the 2020 standards. And those standards were supposed to. Some years ago, we had a state goal that the 2020 standards were going to be zero net energy homes. We are not there. They had a backdoor in the current standards, giving credit to PV minor PV placements on homes, rather than improving the envelope. And I agree with Jerry that we should be integrating PV and other renewables with efficiency. That's not well coordinated at all. The 15-day language in what will become the 2020 code has another back door, and that's for storage. The new standards will have a direct trade-off between local storage at the residential level. The individual residence level, trading off against a better envelope. It's a bad trade, and we really don't want to be. I don't think we want to be amassing batteries in residential locations at this point. It's the wrong side of the meter. We don't have the control systems. I think it's going to be a disaster. The other thing driving the standards in California is in my view, boondoggle, known as TDV, time-dependent valuation of energy. On the surface, it looks like a smart way to combine demand issues with energy issues. And the fact is, from my point of view, that it did that initially, but as it sort of puts itself out of business by solving the problem by focusing on the right efficiency measures that also affect demand, it's become very spiky. The method is I think seriously flawed, and the actual values that are used in the TDV analysis and TDV implementation of the standards emphasizes the importance of about less than 10 hours out of the entire year, and so it's flawed. The last thing is that we're not moving as much as we need to really push retrofit. It's a poor stepchild to new construction, where it's easier to regulate, but the impact is much smaller, and we need to pay a lot more attention on a state level to that.
Yeah.
We have time for about one more comment here. It's almost on the hour, but go ahead. Who was it?
Yeah, this is Jerry. I'll a short comment. California, thanks to state regulation, is maybe leading the way, but it's also creating huge stovepipes. That's one of the reasons I focus on the local side, because I think that's where the integration is possible. Rob kind of went through chapter and verse some of the consequences of the state level stovepiping. It's very difficult for the state regulatory commission to think in an integrated way about local resources. I just my last minute pitch to this, you know, stay focused local and try to help the local jurisdictions as much as possible.
Anybody else had a comment here?
Nope. Yeah, one of the ironies to me is that NARUC had invented in 1990 a financing mechanism that solves all the problems for doing retrofits. That's essentially what Michigan Saves is doing now, so you can read all about it at michigansaves.org. One major difference is that Michigan Saves has only just now started doing it with one utility as on-bill financing. The original model called for it to be on-bill, but either through PACE or through pay-as-you-save, which was a registered trademark, or through the Michigan Saves kind of model, customers can get all the money all at once, up front, no money down, to do all those good things that we want to have them do to their building all at once and accomplish those kind of deep retrofits. It's not a perfect model for it, because they want to restrict everything to something like, say, a 7-year to 10-year payback. I think Michigan Saves now has a first program where they're going to go out to 15 years, but it's way closer than anything else we know about, and the irony to me is NARUC had it invented for them, and then only one state did it a little teeny bit. Hawaii did it for solar water heaters, and nobody else picked it up at all until I was able to convince the Michigan Commission to at least want to get it started. We never had any utility cooperation yet until we had the first municipal utility just decide to cooperate. But the model's there for anybody who wants to learn how to do it, and now we know how to do it with or without a willing and cooperative utility.
Yeah, I think relying on utilities to have the incentive is just basically not going to happen. I mean, that's why Delaware put up a sustainable energy utility that had no disincentives and has done in that tiny state now probably over $100 million of deep retrofits going out 20 years. So can be done, but you need a CCA would do it, but you need a platform that isn't a utility.
Yeah, or a big stick to hold over the utility's head, maybe. That's great. I want to learn more about what Delaware has done through that entity. I knew about the entity, but I did not know about the deep retrofit work.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap it up. We have another conference call next week talking about electric vehicles. Should be very interesting, especially in the area of using the older batteries from cars to renovate them. So there's some interesting conversations in that, also discussing financing, different ways of financing EVs. So, Baird, I think you would probably be interested in that as well, among other people here. So thanks for coming, and I hope to see you next time. Don't forget the webinar that we have also on EVs on the 19th, I believe. So, all right.
Yeah, thank you all for the time. I'll be in touch with some by email, and I invite anybody to get in touch with me anytime that you think we might have some reason to talk. Thanks.
All of your emails and all your contact information, guys, are all, guys being women and men, are all on the msdforum.com website. Go over to connect, and then look down to meet the leaders, and everybody's there. So you can find all the contacts there. And thanks again. Thanks, Tom. And
all right. Thank you. Bye, everyone.
Bye now.
Bye. Bye.